The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 18th of April, 2019. On the podcast today, I have David Ryan, Chief Executive Officer of Powerhouse Energy. PHE is the ticker there, and David discusses the significance of their first revenue-generating contract. Also on the podcast, James Barter, Chief Executive Officer of Futura Medical, FUM is ticker there, and James talks about their lead drugs, their progress, and milestones approaching. Also on the podcast, Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, covers Unilever, Polymetal, and PZ Cousins. And as always, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can see both these lists, in fact, top 10 versions of these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll see a host of other content from Malky's blog there, Align Research, EcTech Initiation Coverage, you've got Rockfire Resources article, Polymetal article as well, actually, reports record quarter of gold production, and other stuff. There's lots of podcasts, lots of videos at voxmarkets.co.uk. By the way, if you use the Vox Markets app, do me a big favour. If you like it and you get the notifications in the morning and you use it for free, could you give us a decent review on iTunes or Apple? Just give it a five-star review there and recommendation, and it helps get found and get used by more people. Would really appreciate that if you could have Apple's iTunes. Or, in fact, if you're on Android, obviously do the same with the Google Play Store there if you could. I think it's called that. But you know what I'm trying to say. Give us a nice review. Much appreciated. Thanks a lot.
To receive free company updates straight to the front screen of your smartphone whenever a company you follow releases significant news, download the free Vox Markets app from voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Ryan, Chief Executive Officer of Powerhouse Energy. The ticker there is PHE. David, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Justin.
Now, we've spoken before, and I know quite a bit about Powerhouse. I mean, I do a little bit of stock for transparency reasons, and I just like the tech. But for people who are not sort of familiar, David, and maybe they're new to the podcast or something, but just give them a summary as to what Powerhouse is all about, please.
Powerhouse have been developing a technology to take non-recyclable plastics and create energy from them, either as power or hydrogen for use in road transport vehicles and cars.
Yeah, that's what I like about it. It's like you are taking something that nobody wants, and in fact we've got a problem with, because we are landfilling and incinerating, and it's no good. It's unsustainable, you know. When you see the amount we just throw away, it's ridiculous. So you're taking rubbish and turning it into something useful that everyone wants, and that's energy. So I just like the tech, you know. And for a long time, people sort of questioned whether this is commercial, because it's very cutting edge. But you've come on board, and you've got a background in engineering. So now you've got to a sort of milestone here. Your news is first revenue contract for Powerhouse Energy. Take us through the detail of this, if you could, David.
Well, Justin, it is exciting. I mean, the customer for us, Waste Electricity, have been so closely following the technology for many years, and they are as easy a customer to bring on board as any, because they are also committed to the technology. They have developed a site with Peel Holdings in the Northwest, and the site is embedded in the Peel Protos site, where other recycling and technology developers are going to be located. So they have now asked us to develop all the basic design and the basic technical premise, mm-hmm. to allow the site to be permitted and work through the potential feedstocks that they may get from other developers on the site.
Yeah, yeah. I tweeted out today saying, now the revenue there is £400,000. It's not massively significant, it's not a massive amount, but it's significant, isn't it?
Oh, it's demonstration that for future projects, people will pay us for the work we are doing. Mm-hmm. I've been very much aware since taking on the CEO role that we've been undertaking free work for for potential developers and major waste companies internationally on a free basis. This is not right, and obviously it's a result of us being in the nascent part of the technology. This time next year, we will be paid for every exercise we do.
Yeah. And so this is the first, of course, and I suppose this will prove it, won't it, the concept? And, I mean, how fast do you intend to roll out this? Once this is up and running, the first one is probably the trickiest, isn't it?
Justin, the first one is my elephant in the corner of the business. No technology can be rolled out without actually developing through that first plant. For ourselves, it is relatively risk-free because all we're doing is taking known chemical engineering processes and known equipment and putting them together in a different way. That said, you know, the market and the financial community do want to be able to come and kick the tires. The first one is really critical for me. Once I've done that, I have a really strong pipeline of blue chip waste companies, developers, and international partners who are very keen to build a second, third, and tenth unit.
Wow. So, like you say, you're right there. For you, it's critical here, and for people watching on, these blue chip waste companies, they're watching on as well. How confident are you it's going to work?
There's a $6 million question. I am confident. You know, we're doing everything within the engineering processes to take away the risks. Yes, there are always challenges and issues in a project development, but there is nothing that we see as a showstopper on the technology at all. Indeed, you know, the fact that DNV have reviewed the process and have given us a clean bill of health to take it forward gives everyone a great degree of confidence.
And so, I mean, I got to say, you've managed to, you've fulfilled your promise. In the last update in February, you did say within the next quarter you'd have a sort of heads of terms signed and revenue generating contract, and you've done that. So I don't want to put you in the corner and say how long this will take, but because, you know, things never run out of time when you're working with tech like this. But, you know, in a ballpark sort of figure, how soon do you envisage having this up and running?
This next stage we're entering in is a couple of months, and then once we get through to the green light to start building on the site, you know, we intend to be building and putting equipment on site before the end of the year, and proving the commercial position of the gas at the end of the year or early next year.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned there's a lot of people looking at, I mean, in this country, I assume, but you also announced back in February you're in talks with Toyota. Is that still ongoing?
The Toyota Toshu dialogue is ongoing. One aspect that is a slight change that I'm bringing to the table is I do like a competitive landscape, and Japan is an exciting location for us. And I have asked my negotiators to ensure that we get value for money from any agreement we sign up. I'm looking for my international partners, whether in Japan, Australia, or on the continent, to offer supporting revenues for our development program. That's part of what comes with signing an agreement with Powerhouse.
Yeah, okay. Well, and so essentially, I mean, you know, once this is up and running, I mean, how big can this practically get? How many, you know, I mean, you mentioned 10 there, units. Is that viable? Is it feasible to have, you know, how many units can there possibly be out there in this country, for example?
In this country, there could be up to 500. We position ourselves that the equipment vendors we're working with will actually be part of our licensing on. So our goal will be to have equipment that can be manufactured in many parts of the world, mm-hmm. and have then international delivery partners in many parts of the world to meet local demand. Our potential pipeline is full of international engagement. We are not engaging with all those countries at the moment and all those potential agents until we've developed the first process and are confident of how we roll out.
Yeah, yeah. So it's quite exciting because it's a very hot sector, isn't it? I mean, everyone's talking about, you know, EV and all that stuff. But of course, there's been, you know, lots of money by big corporations pumped into hydrogen. And yours is a missing part of the puzzle, because at the moment, the way hydrogen's produced, I don't know whether that's sustainable, but yours is definitely a novel way of doing it, isn't it?
Yeah, ours is a roadmap onto any nation's movement into a hydrogen economy. It might not be the only solution that would be needed by a country to move to hydrogen, but it's certainly a foundation stone of the initial rollout into hydrogen cars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And so, what's your thoughts at the moment, David? Are you quite excited? Are you seeing this as a bit of a blue sky opportunity here?
Unfortunately, at the work front level, it's difficult to see it in front of the huge amount of work we've immediately got in front of us. What I do take is great solace from our shareholder base, who can see that helicopter vision and can see the huge potential for the powerhouse technology, both in the UK and internationally.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay, David, so before we go, I mean, what's hopefully the next milestone you're hoping to achieve?
There are a series of imminent milestones. We need to test some of the feedstocks that we're going to get and give confirmation that, yes, we can make energy from these non-recyclable plastics. So I'm looking forward at a technical level to undertaking that testing. The next challenge I'm seeking is who we choose as our initial development partner and build contractor for this first site. So that is an imminent decision that I'm looking forward to taking to conclusion.
Mm-hmm, marvellous stuff. Okay, well, one final thing, David, or three final things, I should say, is if someone's listening to this, likes the sound of what you're doing, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Oh, Justin, you do throw me on the spot. Look, firstly, I know people will have been following us for a while, but the technology is ready. It's the initial revenue that we're generating now is just the beginning of the post pre-revenue generation for Powerhouse. We have a really strong pipeline of potential orders. So once we've overcome the elephant that is the first plant, in the corner of the first plant, we will be on to a successful rollout and profitable operation. Finally, and Justin, you're a proponent of the stock. What I can say is people who follow us can join my shareholder list, which is full of engaging, interesting, committed people. The only reason that I am fully on board with this is because the belief of those shareholders, many of them who've been with us for 8 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, listen, I mean, there's a big issue. Like you said, we've got a big global issue here, and you are one of the, you know, companies, you know, tackling this in a certain way, you know, attempting to tackle this, you know. And so in my mind, not just from an eco point of view, but it's a massively growing area. You know, it's a growth area. And I try to invest in companies where the end markets are very big or growing quickly. And of course it is, because everyone wants to try and solve the problem of waste and plastic, and we need to create more energy. So you're just one of the many solutions to that, I think. And it's a very interesting story. And to me, I can only invest in companies I feel very interested in, you know? And I do feel interested in your tech. And it's interesting watch you develop this. So anyway, it's good to hear this news, and hopefully David will catch up in the not-too-distant future.
Thank you, Justin. All I'll say to end on it is, and leave in people's mind, is plastic is my gold. Thank you, and I look forward to speaking to you again.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is James Barter, Chief Executive Officer of Futura Medical. FUM is the ticker there. James, thanks for joining me.
Good morning. Thank you.
Nice to have you on the podcast. We've not spoken before, so it's always good to get some new information, some new companies on the podcast to give some investment ideas. So before we go into the detail of what you're doing at the moment, James, and what you're about there, just give us a brief summary as to what the company's about, and maybe your lead products there, if you could.
Yes, very happy to. Futura Medical is a pharmaceutical development company that specializes in transdermal delivery of drugs. In other words, so, you know, getting it across the skin. Mm-hmm. We currently don't look at new drugs. We look at existing compounds that have already been approved, which we can either improve drug delivery just by getting more drug through the skin, or where we can repurpose it for a different indication. We have sort of two sort of key products. Our lead product is known as Med 2005, and this is a topical gel for erectile dysfunction, where the gel is applied directly to the head of the penis. And the kind of key differentiator over this and Viagra, which I think, you know, most people know about, is the speed of onset. Viagra typically takes an hour to have an effect, and actually longer if you have a full stomach, in other words, after a sort of, you know, a dinner, whereas ours works in around about 5 minutes. So it can bring back spontaneity and intimacy with such a rapid speed of onset, and kind of removes the sort of the pre-planning that is required for a product like Viagra. Yeah. Our second product is again a topical gel, and it contains diclofenac. Diclofenac, again, is a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. It's a well-known drug, and its primary purpose is for the treatment of pain relief. And our product is similar to Voltarol, again, just an efficient delivery system to give rapid pain relief.
Yeah, yeah. And I suppose the advantage with using pre-approved drugs before, like I said, is less cost, I assume, is there, and obviously speed to market?
Yes, less cost. The certainly a lot of the safety work is less, because you can go to the regulators, because the drug has already been, if you like, established from a safety perspective. But obviously, there will be slightly different depending on the mode of application where it's being used. But yes, it means that it is less risky from an investment perspective and from a clinical development perspective as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go into your lead drug, your Med 2005. Take us to where you are with that at the moment.
Yeah, it's been a very exciting sort of past 12 months. We ran, you know, last year we had we completed and got published a phase two study, which is a sort of, in clinical terms, you have a phase one, phase two, phase three being the last piece of development. Phase two study was a 230 patient study. It went very well. We hit all our primary clinical endpoints, which in very simple terms means that it basically worked. We had a write-up in the Journal of Sexual Medicine, which is a peer-reviewed magazine. And as a consequence of that, we then went in and did we have now started our sort of final phase three program. And the first one of these is a 1,000-patient study, which, if the results are compelling, will enable us to file for regulatory approval in 2020 within Europe and also a number of other countries. The US, which is obviously the biggest market, we will need to do a second confirmatory phase three study, which we would expect to complete next year as well. So that has kind of really been, you know, the key thing that we've been working on. We've had a lot of interest from different commercial partners who are very interested with it, with a really true unique aspect of this product, the speed of onset, which, as I say, can bring spontaneity and intimacy to couples rather than trying to have to plan when they're going to have sex ahead of time. And delivery of these good phase three results, which we expect to happen later this year in December, we are well advanced in the recruitment for this study, is likely to increase the value. Again, to put that into perspective, the erectile dysfunction market is around about a $5 billion market, and we think we could see over $1 billion opportunity for this product because the rapid speed of onset, and again, because it's a topical, localized, targeted delivery, it is likely to be a very safe product, and around about 10% of men who have erectile dysfunction cannot take Viagra because it's contraindicated because of their other medications, and we do not expect this product to be contraindicated. So a 20% market share, we think, is a good chance of success.
Yeah, well, I was just going to ask you the size of that market, and you just answered that. That's a big potential there. So how do you, without getting too technical, how do you sort of repurpose these drugs then? How's it done?
Okay, well, in Med 2005, the drug that we use is a thing called glycerol trinitrate. Now, that's been around for many years. Its primary use in pharmaceutical terms is for the treatment of angina. Now, angina is where your arteries get blocked and it causes you chest pain. And what this drug does, and you can take it either sublingually or in a sort of patch, is it's applied directly to the chest in the case of a patch. It is a smooth muscle relaxant. So what it does is it dilates the arteries, increases blood flow to the heart. So you kind of think about it in very simple terms. You're applying it directly to the penis. It has the same effect. You dilate the arteries, increases blood flow into the penis. It's a little more complicated than that, and I'm not trying to patronize your listeners. Mm-hmm. But again, it's the mode of action is not in question. It's just making sure that you get the therapeutic correct dose to achieve what you want to do by being applied to the penis. And also in a format, in a safe formulation, which is not going to be dangerous, is not going to be unsafe, and also importantly, not going to be unsafe for the female partner either.
Yeah, and like you say, it's all down to the data, which you hope to get towards the end of this year. But your confidence level quite high on this, are they, passing phase three?
Yes, I mean, the phase two study, that was a 232 patient study, and we saw in the mild and mild to moderate patients who suffer from ED, we saw good efficacy over placebo. And all these studies, you have to compare against placebo to show that there is actually a proven clinically relevant effect. This study we're now doing is 1,000 patients, so it's four times bigger. But we're actually testing not only the original dose, but we're looking at two higher doses, and of course, again, against placebo. So what we saw in that first phase two is it worked very well on the mild and mild to moderate patient group. What the regulators want to see is, well, look, if you increase the dose, we had a very clean safety profile. Mm-hmm. Out of 1,000 intercourse events, we had sort of 15 headaches, which is very, very low. So the regulator said, look, we think you've probably shown the minimally effective dose, but we'd like you to try at higher doses to see if you can improve the efficacy, especially in those patients that have moderate or severe erectile dysfunction. So we think there's a good chance of efficacy. Do we think this product will work particularly well in the severe patients? Probably not. There aren't that many drugs that do. But the real commercial opportunity is for those men that have mild and mild to moderate erectile dysfunction. And we've kind of already shown that it looks like it works pretty well in that. So, yes, I think we have a good level of confidence that we will see some good efficacy in the study and sufficient to get us approval.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's move on to TPR 100. What's that all about? And just explain a bit as the way you are with that, if you could.
Okay, again, this is, as I said, it's a topical gel, and it's very similar, I suppose, to a product called Voltarol. Is where we're driving again. We're using we have a technology called Dermasys, which is our skin delivery system, which is obviously used in our treatment for erectile dysfunction. It's also used for TPR 100. We've already done a lot of clinical work on this, and we have a commercial partner for this, a company called Thornton Ross, which is part of the STADA group for the UK. And this was filed for regulatory approval last summer for approval and marketing rights in the UK. We've already had feedback from the regulators, and this is pretty normal. You know, these are big, complex regulatory dossiers you submit, and the regulators have already come back and asked us a number of questions, and we're working with Thornton Ross to address those questions. We're doing a bit more lab work, and that will be resubmitted. So we remain, you know, pretty hopeful that by the end of this year we could get approval for this product, and obviously the marketing launch of that product at that stage as well. I think, you know, strategy, what we're trying to do with this at the moment is to really maximize the opportunity for shareholders is we're not really looking to license it beyond the UK at the moment until we get that regulatory approval. Because if you can de-risk it for commercial partners, it adds more value for us and therefore for our shareholders. And likewise with Med, which is a really big opportunity, we want to try and keep our powder dry on that until we've got the phase three data, which reduces the risk, the uncertainty, and therefore drives up the potential commercial value for the product.
Absolutely. And, these are cash sort of, or capital-intensive activities, but you raise cash and you seem to have a healthy balance at the end of year anyway.
That is correct. They are very capital-intensive. The phase three study is sort of around about 8 million. So, yeah, it's some fairly large numbers. But you're absolutely right. We have enough money to see us through this phase three program and the headline results, which we expect at the sort of December this year. So we have enough money to complete that and through to next year.
Mm-hmm, marvellous stuff. James, good to chat to you. Before we go, every day on the podcast I highlight the top five most followed companies. So if someone's listening to this right now, likes the sound of what you're talking about, the progress you're making, but are not following the company's story, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay. I think the first one is MED, our topical gel for erectile dysfunction, has already completed a phase two study where we hit our, you know, key primary clinical endpoint to prove efficacy. So the phase three study, which we're now in now, is really looking, you know, we'll repeat this as well as looking at higher doses to see if we can improve efficacy. So I think we've got a pretty good chance of getting some success in that. I think our second point is it's a big market, you know, erectile dysfunction. This is a potential $1 billion product in a market worth around about $5 billion and growing as the world gets older. And people want to have a more active sex life throughout their sort of life. And I think thirdly, I'd say is, look, we are a pharmaceutical company in research and development. But we're a late stage company. We've got enough money to see through this very important study this year. We've also got, and you know, the end, we're working towards the end of that clinical development. We've also got another product which we've completed clinical development on and is with the regulator hoping for approval. So those are kind of the three reasons why I would suggest people sort of follow us.
Excellent stuff. James, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your time.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. You all right, Chris?
Yeah, very good, thanks. Very good.
Yeah, do you know what? I mean, on the junior markets today, very little news out, almost like companies are trying to avoid this long break, you know, maybe they'll release something after the break if they can. They're trying to avoid, because I mean, literally, I was looking down and I was tapping my computer to see if the RNS machine was working this morning, but I don't know.
I don't know, perhaps, are they going to put all the data out after hours or something when, you know, what is it, no one's watching a clock, I think is what they call it. Who knows? Perhaps there'll be a few excitable companies that would choose to do that.
Okay, well, your end of the market, the bigger end that you'd like to inhabit, anything coming out from that end?
Yeah, no, there are a few things. I mean, Unilever, obviously well known to everybody. I think it's going to be a pretty sunny day and a pretty sunny Easter. So, you know, Unilever and their Magnum and Walls ice creams and everything else will pick up, no doubt, a few extra sales from those. But of course, it's a huge diversified consumer products company, very active around the world in all sorts of different areas, home and hygiene and ice creams and a variety of other things as well. Numbers today, it's funny actually, that they're talking about underlying sales up 3.1%, which doesn't sound too bad, but then they admit that for the full year they'll be at the bottom end of the 3-5% range. So, you know, actually sales are not going gangbusters. They're doing well in the emerging markets, up 5%, which of course means that it's the in quotes, the developed markets, the UKs, the Europes, the North America, the Japans, which are a bit sluggish. And, you know, we know that, judging by everything that we see in the economy day to day around us. But, you know, everything else is on track for them. Profits, cash flow, you know, the tone of the statement is actually all right in the wider scheme of things. I must admit, and I've certainly talked about it on this podcast, I haven't been a fan of Unilever stock. I find the stock a bit expensive, a bit of a consensus buy. You know, as I say, lots of people no doubt listening will have it in their pension funds or something like that, because it is a company with longevity and strong brands and everything else. But I can't get excited particularly about the valuation, let alone sort of the corporate bog up that was the whole kind of, we're going to delist from the UK and focus on the Dutch structure and everything else. But you know, the market does seem to like these numbers. The shares have, you know, if you do look at charts and everything else, you take a quick look at the Unilever chart and you would say that, you know, is it breaking out? You know, there's this huge kind of in sterling terms, sort of between sort of 44 and 45 pounds, a bit of resistance. And it's right up there again at this moment in time. So technicians are probably quite excited about this one. I have to say, fundamentally, for all the good attributes, I find the stock a little bit firmly valued for what you get in terms of sales and profits growth.
Yeah, well, do you know, I'd be patient here. It has gapped up a little, and it's now touching 45 quid, and it's been there on the 24th of August 2018. Mm. It's been there again in October 2017 and just before that, and it never quite makes it. Even last time it just got, where did it get it? In 2017, it broke above it and went up to about 45 and a half, but it didn't it managed to come back down then. So unless it makes it, you know, a confident rally above that mark, you know, I'd say 45, 50, 46 quid maybe, I'd wait and see, because it may just come back to the range, yeah, revert to mean, no, you know.
Absolutely. You don't know. And you know, you look at that sub £40 level, and at that point, you know, from a fundamental kind of valuation perspective, it looks a bit more interesting. I wouldn't say it's very interesting, but it looks a bit more interesting. And I can understand a little bit why people may have picked up the stock then on those relative dog days. But yeah, you know, that this sort of 40, 45 odd sort of trading range, I think for the moment, my feeling is, based on the fundamentals, this holds. I don't see it getting particularly better, and their comments today are all right, but as I say, on the sales side, they admitted it's not going quite as well as perhaps they would have guided, and that's all to do with the fact that, you know, us consumers are a bit more choosy, are choosing to buy some lower priced alternatives and everything else. So yeah, it's all right, but it's not stellar, and as a consequence, I don't think you need to chase the shares.
Exactly. Well, it's the same old thing, isn't it? When you see something at the top of a range and it's tried to do it, you know, three times now, trying to break out three times, he hasn't managed to do it. Wait. You've got patience on your side. Let's see if it comes back and reverts the mean and gets back in the range. But there we are. I'm just looking at the website, the brands. Wow. Unbelievable. How many brands?
Yes.
There's a grid here. No. If you go to Unilever, it's /brand, brands there. 1, 2, 3, 4 times. Hang on. They've got blocks here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So 20 brands per page. You've got two pages and two letters. So that's just 42 brands, and most of them you'd know. You know, Lipton, Magnum, yes, Surf, unbelievable, Ben & Jerry's, Cartdoor, ones you never thought there. Cif, you know, Kinetto, Radox, well, you can carry on, Vaseline, Walls, Brill Cream, Coleman's. How would they sit together, Brill Cream and Coleman's?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't mix them personally, but there you go. I'm sure some people do. But.
PG Tips, Pot Noodle. I can carry on. It's like a generation game. Marvellous. Yeah. Cool. What's next then, Chris?
Well, if we go from something which is at the top of the range, perhaps something which has slid down in recent weeks, Polymetal, Poly, P-O-L-Y, mm-hmm. On the London market, gold producer, I think now actually with Randgold sort of shift to the North American markets via a merger, I think the largest by market cap gold producer on the London market, Polymetal had a little trading update today. Their shares have come down over recent weeks. And I think partially it's because the gold price has come off the highs of a few weeks ago. I think actually the gold price is pretty much at year-to-date lows now. As people have kind of got excited about the stock market, they've sort of, you know, faded some of their enthusiasm for gold. And obviously any gold producer is going to be influenced their share price a little bit by the gold price. But Polymetal, I have to say, they continue to impress in terms of production growth, which these are first quarter production growth numbers out today. In terms of gold equivalent space, up 27% year-on-year. That's helped deliver a little bit by timing. It's not growing that fast inherently, but you know, the company is growing in terms of its production. It's keeping its costs down. It's reiterating all of its hopes in terms of the cash cost and production overall for the full year. And I have to say, the tone of the statement was very good. And I highlight this one for two reasons. The first is that the shares have come down a bit, and they're back towards the £8 level, which is sort of something I'd written down a couple of months ago when I met the company, as a level that I might be a bit interested in picking up, thinking about the stock more inherently. I also noticed that next week the company's got a big capital markets day. So again, as a fundamental investor, that excites me, because I want to have new information, I want to have catalysts. And it seems to me as if you've been thinking about this one, or kind of this one's popped up on a system or something, that capital markets day next week is going to be a very interesting opportunity to listen to what the company has to say about life, and update yourself, and try and figure out whether this actually is all hanging together. My gut feel, based on, as I say, meeting them earlier this year, is that actually this is a pretty good story. A bit of production growth in predominantly Russia, but a little bit of Kazakhstan as well. Some good technology, but also I think from a portfolio diversification perspective, it's good, I think, to have a little bit of gold in today's world, which is, let's face it, a bit uncertain, and certainly valuations are a bit firmer than they were at the start of the year or a few months ago.
Yeah, what I think is odd is that I don't think the macro picture has changed drastically in the last, couple of weeks or so, because we've always had this, now everyone's of the consensus, or economists seem to be the consensus, the global growth is slowing down. Yes, we'll have an ease maybe because of the trade dispute between China and America is not going to go ahead, or some kind of deal is going to get sorted out. But they all believe now, slowing growth is happening. So you think gold will be a good thing. But because we've had a rally, or, we've bounced a little bit from those oversold levels of December, people are now more bullish stock market, but I feel this is just a short-term bounce a little bit. I think maybe we may grind lower, but yet, like I said, the sentiment has got, people are sort of risk on a bit now, and then gold has fallen back a bit. But I think when people take the eye off the ball and gold sinks, I think it's always good to top up on something, that's exposed to gold, always.
Precisely. And what for me, when I think about gold stocks, and I've been investing them for quite a while now, it comes back down to, the fundamentals. Do you have some growth, production growth, or potential for production growth? Are you producing gold at an attractive level? So you look at the all-in cash costs and obviously then the cash flow off that. And in the case of Polymetal, they're ticking all the boxes there and they're paying a 5% dividend yield. You can sort of make that work. And it's a question of a little bit of macro awareness, where is gold going, and obviously checking that the company's on track in terms of its operational whatevers. As I say, the big capital markets day will be a good opportunity for doing that, but certainly based on their last set of full numbers, the full year numbers for 2018, that looks pretty good. So I would say certainly one to watch at the very least, and lots more info out on them in the next few days.
Marvellous stuff. Anything else happening?
Well, talking about info, I mean, I have to bring this one to your attention. And it's ironically a company I like, a company that I hold, a company that I've certainly talked about positively before on this podcast, and that's PZ Cousins. And again, it's another, a bit like Unilever, a branded consumer company. They've got slightly fewer brands than Unilever, being a bit smaller, but you know a few of them. I mean, Saint-Tropez in sort of fake tan and whatever, Cousins and Imperial Leather in soap and hygiene. These are well-known brands, well-respected brands, and actually PZ Cousins have done an all right job selling them in Europe, in Asia, and in the Americas. They've been hurt by their decent size exposure to Nigeria, which has gone through a few local difficulties, let's put it that way, in its economy over recent months and years. So that's held their corporate kind of profits back a bit. But they've come up with a little update today, and actually, little is what? I mean, it's so terse. It's unbelievable. They said, full-year profit expectations remain in line with the guidance issued at the time of the interim results in January. That's great. That's a starter sentence. That's brilliant. Yeah. And then I'm waiting for the detail. And the detail is we've got some numbers coming out in, I think it's June and July, and that's it. Yeah. That is it. That is the complete RNS statement.
And there's six sentences, and that's it, really. And that's, one's a long one.
And the only one, if you're an investor, you're really interested in is the one I read out, because the other ones are just sort of procedural kind of, and numbers are coming out on a certain date sometime in the future. What I want to see from companies, and, you look at Unilever and Polymetal, the companies we've talked about otherwise today, they're making an effort to sort of give a bit of colour, talking about what their brands are doing, what the geographies are doing, cost controlled and related. Surely PZ Cousins, they might not have the full set of accounts. I appreciate that. They might not have complete insight on absolutely everything. They may, for some reasons of marketing campaigns or whatever, not want to give away absolutely everything they're doing. Absolutely fine. But surely there's a little bit of colour they could have said about Nigeria, about, Imperial Leather sales in the UK, or whatever it might have been, cash flow generation, dividends, whatever. You've got to give people a bit more, particularly if it's going to be a little while before you're going to be talking to the market again. And number two, your shares have been under the cosh a little bit because of some of these trading issues in Nigeria. Give a bit more, and this is how you inspire investors, get them to buy your shares, or when things are tough, understand the strategy and the policies and stick with you. I just think people have got to work with the markets a bit more. That's, we all see the negative of poor statements where people have kind of, it's all spin and it's no real substance. We all get that, but you can do so much more than just some kind of, this has been drafted almost like by a lawyer, something which is technically correct, but actually not really giving much away.
Well, do you know what I just did there? I looked at, they say there, fully, you're right, there's one sentence there where they say fully expectations remain in line with guidance issued at the time of interim results in January. And then the other two bits are just dates, the date of the further trading update, 30th of June, date for the results, 23rd of July. A formal presentation will take place at the offices of Instinctive. So I looked down, Instinctive, Tim Lineker and Guy Scarborough, the PR company of Instinctive. They probably drafted this or helped draft this. And I'm thinking, they're probably the best paid PR people per word. RNS ever. They probably have a competition. See how few words they can get in an RNS and see how much per pound they get paid for that word. Because they're on a good whack there. Because you're right. It's true. At the end of the day, it's a business. You've invested in a business. Now, if this business was not listed, for example, and it was down the road and it was like a little business you invested in, you could pop in, you could have a word and you could chat to the guy every day if you wanted to. But you invest in a business here and they come up with this after, you know, I don't know when the last announcement was, but several...
January, yes.
So since January, all the communications they've given you, all you know about the business is that one line. You think, come on, guys, you paid more than this to give me a bit more on this. I put my money into you. Come on.
I just think people, you know, the best companies, they work with the market. And sometimes the best companies don't have the best news. You know, every company bogs up at some level. There's a problem. There's an issue. Something's below expectations. But, you know, that's when your communication should be the greatest, of course. Yeah. You know, so you need to have something of substance always, something which is attempting to be useful. I just think they've got to work a bit better with the market. You know, and if you're trying, the shares have come off, you know, off the highs because of the problems in Nigeria. You know, this is a time when you've got to redouble your efforts to kind of convince people and talk to people. So yeah, I'm afraid I like that. You know, I like the stock inherently. I own the stock, but I'm not impressed by today's RNS. Not by the content per se. In line is absolutely fine with me, but it's just the fact you need more of it. I want to see more colour.
Yeah, I just imagine them saying to somebody in the offices there on the board, this is what we're going to release. And they look at it and the board must think, is that it? Is there any point releasing that? Well, it says, because I mean, yeah, exactly. Just say, you know, it's softer trading in Nigeria, or it's quite good in UK at the moment, or whatever. Or just give it like you're right, a bit of colour, see how is trading. And then at the end, you say, but we are in line, you know, but you want to know what's doing well, what's not, and what you're dealing with a little bit. But there we are. Maybe they just thought, listen, Easter's here, let's get out of the office.
I know. Who knows? But there you go. Perhaps it's back to no one watching a clock, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Marvellous stuff. Well, you know, having said that, Chris, you are free to clock off now. You can do whatever you want. It's Easter, you know.
I wish.
You've talked several more, you know, you talked about 100 times more sentences than they put in the RNS, and they're probably getting paid greatly for that. You know,
They're probably paid 100 times more as well. So there you go. Yeah. There's a winner there somewhere.
Yeah, the mass is stacking up for them, not for us. Cool.
Absolutely.
Have a nice Easter, Chris. Speak next week. Cheers, man.
Speak next week. Sounds fun. Bye.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Bidstack Group, BIDS. At four, Brave Bison Group. Of course, I bought back into those after I had a chat with Clay, the ex-CEO, the outgoing CEO. At three, Cadogan Petroleum. Basically, she's resigned and left the company, but she confirmed there's no operational issue there. At three, Cadogan Petroleum, KAD. At two, Kibo Energy, KIBO. And number one most followed companies, MX Oil. That's MXO. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, it's Angus Energy, a completion of acquisition at Lindsay Interests. At four, Europa Metals Holdings and Company. At three, also Europa Metals Holdings and Company. So that was a company buying off close to 15%. They're called who is it? Wilhelm Zors, Heidelberg, Germany, and the company is Deutsche Batalon Atkins Goldleidenschaft. But it's a private equity company, so they're taking a stake in Europa. They're very interesting goings on. Three, same one, the two RNSs come up there. At two, Nkundesi Energy, shareholder loan conversion. And the number one most liked RNS was Fast Forward Innovations, investee company update, Intensity Therapeutics. And there wasn't a lot of RNS there today. Of course, it's a bank holiday Easter weekend, so I think most companies, nomads, are already eating their Easter eggs, getting stuck in there. One last thing, just a reminder. But if you use the app, the Vox Markets app, please give us a nice review on iTunes and help it, you know, get found more when people type in investment or something like that. then people will find our app and use it. And muchos apreciados. Have a nice weekend.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.